I'm also going to give a shout out to everybody on the West Coast, since I have someone who lives on the West Coast but is from the great state of Texas on the air with me today. I am so excited to have Marion Brooks on the air with me today, y'all. He is an author. He is an MBA candidate, an MBA recipient, and he is an executive life coach. And he just has so much going on, and I can't wait for him to tell you all about himself so we can just get and dig all into his business and find out everything we want to know about who Marion Brooks is. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to some and present to others, because I know he has his own fan base. I'm introducing and presenting Marion Brooks. How are you doing today, Marion?
I am fantastic. What an amazing introduction. Thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome. I can't say stuff that's not true. You know, it's just like, I'm not going to make nothing up. And if I ain't got to say, I'm be like, okay, well, he gonna marry you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You are more than welcome. Thank you so much for being with us on Gabe's PSA today. I am so excited to have you on my show.
Well, thank you, and I'm excited to be here. Your energy, I already feel it through your phone, even when we talked earlier, and just through the email. So I love the passion, and I love the energy. We are kindred spirits, believe me.
Thank you. I know. I found out today, and my producer, Clark Garrison, will be glad to hear this, that we share an affinity for the love of crimson and cream. And
yes.
So,
Newton Howe.
Garrison will be so happy to know that, you know, because he's always talking about Michelle Gilliam, who is his co-host, and she's always going on because every time Adelsa comes on, and I'm always going on every time Adelsa comes on, and so every time Anoop comes on, I always give him an opportunity to get his little dance on and realize that, you know, you know, crimson and cream is crimson and cream. So, honey, welcome to Gabe's PSA.
Thank you.
All righty. So, Marion, tell us a little bit about you, because, you know, like when you go on a TV show, which I know you've probably done this several times before, but they give you like 3 minutes to tell you what to tell the audience what you're doing right now. But I like to go a little deeper with my guests. So I want you to give us a little background information about you. Tell us where you come from, you know, and tell us how you got to the point that you are in life right now.
Okay. So as you said, I'm from Texas originally. So I was born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas. And I was raised primarily by my grandparents, my brother and my sister and I. At one point, my grandparents, my grandmother, Sunshine, and I'll tell you more about her because she's a really important aspect of who I am and how I got to be where I am. But my grandmother and my grandfather stepped in to raise us. But early on in life, I was discounted because of my parents. So I come from a single mother with 3 children, and she had 3 different fathers. So we have 3 different fathers. And my father has 11 children by 10 different women. So, yes. So, and that's usually the response I get, especially when I speak to kids.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And, you know, my guest last week, she had 12 kids on her own by herself. Oh. Like, I'm like, you gave birth to 12 children? She was like, yes, I have 12 children. I was like, girl, I figured out what was causing that the first time. And, you know, it's just like I said, okay, I know what to do not to make that happen again. So, because,
yes.
You know, it's like childbirth.
Was, or something in there.
Oh, my God, I know. It's just like childbirth is like the bar exam. Why would I ever want to do that again? So, so yes, indeed. Multiple children is that has never been on my radar or my agenda. Okay, so your dad had 11 kids.
Yes, 11 children by 10 different mothers. And so early on, I was discounted because people judged me based on who my parents were. And I remember being a little boy, it was Thanksgiving. And, you know, growing up with my grandparents, we didn't have a lot of money. They were retired by the time they took us in, so we didn't always have enough to eat. But I knew on Thanksgiving that we were going to have food and we were going to have leftovers for a few days.
Right,
so it was a few
days.
So it was one of my exciting moments or times every year. But I remember walking in as a kid. I was around 6 years old and hearing the adults talking as I passed by, and someone said, "Whose kid is that?" And when my grandmother told them who my parents were, they said, "Oh, that boy doesn't have a chance. He won't be anything."
Wow.
And I remember as a little boy hearing that, and I went to the back and I started crying, and my grandmother eventually came to the back, and she said, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "Well, you know, I don't want to get in trouble or anything, but I came in and I heard what they said about me. What did I do? What is it about me that they say that I won't be anything? You know, what did I do wrong?"
Right, right.
And my grandmother said to me, she was like, "What you don't understand is that that's the limitation that they placed on your life, but that's
right.
not a limitation that's on your life." And
you better say that. Yes, ma'am. That is absolutely right.
And the other thing she told me is she said, "And what they don't understand is how powerful that word, their words are. But what I want you to understand is how powerful your words are, and you're going to do amazing things."
Right.
I was a black woman born in 1915 in Texas, and I went to college. So you're going to go to college, and you're going to do even more than that, and you're going to touch the world. So this is what she told me, and then she really molded me. So she gave me hope as a little boy, and I listened to her voice versus their voices, and that's one of the things people have to be clear about is the who are they listening to and what are they being filled with, because that's what
we
fill out of them.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't realize what they're doing to children, Mary, and when they do that. And people, I mean, people, it's amazing how ignorant people can be to, you know, how they are stigmatizing children when they do those types of things. Because when I was a little girl, you know, my brother was the only boy, my sister was the oldest girl, my little sister was the baby, and grown people referred to me as the dark fat one. And, you know, it is, and it was just like I learned that, you know, fat can be lost, and black is truly beautiful. And I told my husband, I said, "You want to know why I'm so, you know, I'm such a princess?" I said, "Go blame my mama." I said, "She ain't with us no more, so you can't do nothing to her. So blame her for the fact that she told me I was cute every day."
Exactly.
She told me I was cute, so I believed her.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you were just describing. So my grandmother gave me hope, but then she showed me how. She showed me how to be a good person. Like, everyone knew that the Brooks house and Sunshine's house was always a place to go if you needed a place to stay. So she was always investing in other people. She taught me about financial responsibility. She taught me about being a good citizen and caring more about what I can do for people than what people can do for me. And that really helped to mold me into the man that I am today. And she gave me hope, right? And she showed me how. And that's why I wrote my new book, What You Don't Know Is Hurting You, The Four Keys to a Phenomenal Career, because I want to give people who are stuck or don't understand the path on how to be successful, I want to give them hope, but I also want to show them step-by-step how to make it happen.
Right, because people see people motivating them and trying to tell them what to do, but if they don't know how, and so many people don't know how, you know, and that's why they aspire to be what they see on the gram and what they see on social media without having any understanding of how that person got there and what they did to get there. So that is so incredibly important, because we have children who are idolizing people who, you know, they may have been born into success. They may, you know, so many things have contributed to their success other than their hard work. And so kids think that they don't have to work and to get to where they're trying to go. And so that ethic has to be there. Wow. So tell us about your schooling, because I saw that you have an MBA and you went to business school for undergrad and for grad school. Is that right?
Yes, yes. So I went to the University of Texas at Arlington for undergraduate, and I ended up with a BA in marketing. And then I was working full-time. This is a very interesting story, but when you talk about putting in the work to accomplish what you want to accomplish, so I was working full-time, selling real estate on the side, and had a brand-new baby. And I was going to grad school at the same time. I was the poll mark for the alumni chapter as well as the advisor for my undergraduate chapter. But I made it happen, and I got my MBA in management.
That's awesome. See that? I mean, you know, but that's just, you got to have the determination to do it if you really, really want to do it, you know. It's hard work has never hurt anybody. My dad taught me you could work and you can't do nothing else to feed yourself because you have zero entitlement to my money. That's what my dad. And that's what I tell my son. You have zero entitlement to my money. That's my money. I'm going to the courthouse dealing with those tested constituents, and I'm dealing with my clients.
Yes.
You're not dealing with that. You have zero entitlement to my money. And I told my son, and he just looks at me and just rolls his eyes so hard that he can see the back of his neck when I tell him that, you know, you can't expect anything from people if you're not willing to do your part. You got to be willing to do your part. You got to be willing to work for what you want if you really want it. If you really want it. So,
Me too. People say they want it, but they don't want to do the work. And even with me as a coach and even in the book, I talk about and I give you the blueprint as the chief transformation officer for Microsoft. She actually wrote the foreword for my book. I finally met her on Tuesday night, and we were talking, and she said, you make it very clear in the book, and what I like about it is you give them the blueprint, but you also reinforce now you need to do the work. Because one of the primary reasons I wrote the book is because I feel that there's a huge void as far as access. And you can't hold people accountable for information or for doing something where they don't understand how to do it.
Right? Exactly.
So in corporate America, according to the Harvard Business Review, only 5% of people are considered high potential. And those individuals get access to information, training, support, mentors, all of these things that help them become successful.
Right.
And that's only 5% in corporate America in general. Now, if you are a minority or a woman, it's an even lower number. It's about 1 to 2%.
Yep.
Lucky for me, early on in my career, I was identified as one of those high potentials. And I got access to all that information, all those resources, and all those tools. So that's a big foundation here. And I wrote the book to pull the veil back and share with the 95% what the 5% usually only receive. I'm getting the access, but back to your point, now you have to do the work.
That's right. And so many people don't understand that part of it, and they want to be able to. You can't fly into flying. You got to crawl before you walk, and you have to understand that there's a process, and if you fall in love with the process, then when you get there, you will realize that, you know, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey and, you know, what you build and what you grow along the journey. So I understand that you have, you know, like honed into that and you're able to tell people about that. And so tell us how your book helps people to, you know, grasp those concepts and what the book is kind of about. You don't have to give it all away because I want people to buy the book.
Yes. So, even if I give it to them, I'm telling you, they will read it and they'll go back to it and they'll go back to it because I already have people that read the e-book and they're like, you know what, I have to buy the physical copy now because I need to highlight some stuff and I need to go back to it.
Right. Exactly. Write some notes in the margins.
Exactly. Write some notes and highlight some things and save some pages. But the premise of the book and how the book helps you is it identifies the four key areas that will either accelerate or derail your career at some point. And I've coached people from executives at HBO, Columbia Music, to actors, to politicians. I coach people from an array. And these four principles apply all the time, and they have applied to my life. Anytime I had a new opportunity or I was stuck in a current opportunity, it fell into one of these four categories. So what I want people to do is I want them to feel empowered, and I want them to walk away and say, you know what, I'm in this situation. Which of the four P's is it? And then now that I have the tools, what am I going to do with it? I want people to be empowered because there are always options, and options give us power. The only time we lose is when we give up. So they didn't have the information. Now they will have the information. So the first P is performance. And I talk about the difference between emotional intelligence and IQ. 80% of success, 80% of success, and I'm going to say this a third time, 80% of success is predicated on emotional intelligence, only 20% on IQ. Now, there have been decades and decades and decades of research that reinforced this. And the key thing that I would like for people to just think about, just from a practical perspective, there are a lot of smart people out there. but there are not a lot of emotionally intelligent people out there.
Mm-hmm.
And my
mm-hmm.
basic definition of emotional intelligence is the ability to manage yourself and your environment more effectively to get the outcomes that you desire.
Right.
So for us in our community, and in many communities, emotional intelligence was never brought up, or if we've heard about it, it's just in passing or a high-level thing. Here I'm giving you the tools. You'll understand the four quadrants of emotional intelligence. You'll understand triggers, what your triggers are, and how to be more effective when you are triggered, and how to manage your environment as effectively as possible. And that will instantly separate you from the crowd.
That's
true. The second one is around perception, how to build a brand. What are the three adjectives, right? How does your packaging and what you wear impact how you are received? And I teach a lot around that. In the third section, I teach people how to show up as connectors and not parasites when dealing with others. So it's around positioning. So I teach them how to play checkers with their career versus, I mean, how to play chess with their career versus playing checkers with their career with developmental plans, mentors, and networking. And then the last P is around persistence. The thing that separates average from exceptional careers is persistence, that ability to find the opportunities in your obstacles versus becoming a victim of what someone else said, did, or didn't do.
Amen.
And so you put those four together in any situation that you have in life, you will be empowered to move
forward if
you're willing to do the work.
That's right. That's right. You cannot lay down and wait for something to lift off of you. You got to be willing to move. You know, it's just like when you keep moving forward and upward, you realize that the obstacle that you thought was insurmountable is now behind you and beneath you. But if you don't keep moving, you can be overwhelmed by a circumstance that, if you keep moving, will be temporary. You can make a temporary circumstance permanent just by sitting in it.
And you say that again. I love that.
And you know what? I just made that up just sitting here.
Let me tell you that. But you will. You can make it permanent because you become static and you just
sit there
and all you're doing is complaining about what's happening to you versus thinking about and planning for what you can make happen.
Right.
And that's where I try to push people, especially my coaching clients. I don't like to be in the victim mode. I don't like for people to sit there slow. Now, we are human, so I give space for that. And then now what are we going to do? Like, I have people just like, oh, I have a bad boss, and they do this, and they do that, and they do this. And I'm like, okay, now what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what are
you
going to do about that situation? How are you going to show up differently? How are you going to connect differently? And so people don't really understand the strategies to a career. And that's one of the things that I really focus on is giving people a clear strategy for their career and then the steps to execute that strategy effectively.
Right, exactly. Oh, wow, that is so awesome. And then when I think about your story, I think about a young lady that I had on the show not too long ago, and she graduated from Thurgood Marshall Law School not too long ago, and she has 5 children under the age of 15. She's a single mother.
Wow.
She came from drug-addicted parents. But she chose not to sit in it. She said, I'm not gonna sit in the circumstance. You know, the first child came, second child came, and she just like, there's still no reason why I can't graduate from college. So she started with an associate's degree. Then she ended up with a bachelor's degree, and then she graduated from law school. And this is what tripped me out about it, Marion. She graduated magna cum laude, okay? Really. I have 3 degrees. And I got all 3 of them. Thank you, Lottie. Just give me my paper so I can get out of here. I don't care about no magna, no summa. Let me go. Am I going? Okay, because when I passed the bar, I was attorney at law, no matter what my GPA was. So I want to work. Well, you know, so I always like to surround myself with smart people because I was telling Nathan the same thing. I'm just smart people. I just love being around smart people. But you have to rise up. Your circumstance and your attitude towards your circumstance is going to determine what effect it's going to have on you. I mean, you know, preachers always say that your attitude determines your aptitude and all of that, you know, those words. But, you know, words mean a lot if you really apply what they mean. Wow, that is awesome.
I agree with you 100%. And when you were talking about my circumstance, because a lot of people, especially now since I've written the book, because, you know, I've been a corporate executive in the pharmaceutical industry for over 20 years. You know, I actually run a $900 million, which will hit $1 billion this year, business. That's
awesome.
The business that I run.
Yeah.
So people look at me and they see me and I'm put together, and they were shocked to understand my past. And
right.
I had a one of our executives say to me,
I'm shocked to understand that you've been doing something for 20 years. You don't look like you older than 29.
Let me tell
you,
we're
look good.
Now.
You
I will
look
be 49
good.
This year.
You'll be 49 this year. I'll be 50 this
yeah.
year. Black don't crack. It's not just the
it don't crack.
It's not. It does
care.
Not crack. You got to take care. That's right. That's right. But anyway, you were saying, oh my God. I had to stop there because that's amazing. 49.
Yes, I will be 49 in December.
Okay, so for those of you who have not seen the advertisement, go look at his picture. Okay, go ahead.
But one of the executives was saying to me, he was just like, I just am really intrigued with you, and I want to spend more time with you and understand how you were able to do everything that you've been able to accomplish in spite of your circumstances. And I had to correct him, and I said, it wasn't in spite of, it was because of my circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
what you have to do is you have to find the opportunities in those obstacles, as I
right.
said previously. So mm-hmm. had I had the parents that I thought I wanted, I might not have that spirit of investing in other people
mm-hmm.
that I learned from my grandmother. I might
right.
not be as benevolent as far as giving and sharing and supporting people. I might not have been as focused on achieving to where I would work as hard as I was working with the fraternity and going to grad school and selling real estate and working full time and taking care of a baby. I might not have had that fire in my belly
right.
had my circumstances been different. So I tell people, don't be upset about the situation. Learn the benefits of that situation.
Right.
And
right.
what I also have done is I look at my parents and I say, you know, when I was growing up, I had issues around, well, they could have done this or they didn't do this. And now I focus on what I've learned from them. And I learned a lot of great things from both of my parents that have led me to be as successful as I have been. But if I only focus on the negative, then that's all I will see are negatives. So I build
right.
on positives, and
right.
my circumstances always give me an opportunity to grow for myself or to grow to be able to help somebody else.
Amen. Amen. And perspective is everything, Marian.
Yeah.
You know, I have a job because of perspective. And so it's just like, you know, where you're sitting when you're looking at it is going to determine, you know, what impact it's going to have on you and whether you're able to make a positive spin on it. But you have to rise above things sometimes. Like I said, if you're looking at it from a sitting position, of course it's going to look overwhelming. But if you stand up and try and
yep.
make your effort to rise above it, then you'll see that the circumstance can be overcome. Wow, that is just incredible. I'm just inspired because they should have had you preaching at Aretha Franklin's funeral today because you are preaching up in hell. You are preaching. That is incredible. I mean, I just love it when I'm inspired. I mean, and when people, it's hard to inspire me because I'd be like, girl, bad. But you, I mean, I'm inspired. I'm inspired by the things that you say. It's like you have, you know, you light a fire. I can see how you light a fire in people when you tell them, you know, your story and they can see where you came from, especially when you talk to young people, because young people have a tendency, like I said, to want to jump from cake to can without walking
yeah.
the steps. And so, you
yep.
know, like seeing somebody who has actually walked the steps, you know, creates an atmosphere so that they will see that they got to work for it if they really want to.
And that is possible for them to do. Exactly.
Right.
And you said something really intriguing that I wanted to go back to when you were talking about the young lady and what she was able to do. And when you were talking about, you know, people and who you have around you and what I call it is success-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the key things. You have to be careful of who's in your circle.
Right.
Right? And because there's actually some research that shows that the five people you spend the most time with, and I'm going to say this slowly so the audience can hear it, the five
yeah.
people you spend the most time with, your average annual income will be the average of theirs.
See?
So Samuel L. Jackson says, in a Capital One commercial, what's in your wallet? I ask, who's in your network? And that will determine what's in your wallet. Now,
that's
it's not
right.
all about money, but money and gives you access to certain things. So to be a success-minded person doesn't mean that you have to be rich, but you have to have a rich mind and be moving forward and thinking about the future
right.
and how you're going to grow versus being at the status quo all the time.
Oh, my God.
Growing
exactly.
versus status quo.
Exactly. And it's just like, I've been in my career for 23 years now, and I will have to see me in the mall, and they'll say something to the effect of, it must be nice to be in the mall in the middle of the day. I'm like, you know what? It is nice. You want to know what nice? Studying, being in college
exactly.
for 9 years, and building up, doing 9 years in the public defender's office and gaining the knowledge that I have so that I'll have the knowledge to preside over cases. That wasn't nice, but it
yep.
is nice to be able to go get my, but I pay my dues to do it. So
yeah, and that's the thing. We paid our dues, and people don't want to pay their dues.
Right. I'm like, you know what? James Evans always said something profound on Good Times. But when Michael took that IQ test, he
mm-hmm.
told that man, he said, how you going to know where I'm at if you ain't been where I've been? Understand where
man.
I'm coming from? See what I'm saying?
You talking about when his calculator exploded?
Yeah.
Oh,
Lord,
I'm a Good Times buff. I love Good
yes.
Times.
I was watching Good Times last night. That's your
I do it on Friday
yeah.
nights myself, so I'm not even lying.
Oh, my God. I know it because when I was single, I used to be jealous of Bookman and his wife, and I knew that my love life really stunk. So.
you are hilarious.
I'm telling you. Okay, so. Before we went on the air, Marion, I told you that this was going to be the fastest hour of your life. So we have gotten to the halfway point of the show because we've been talking 30 minutes. And so we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about some more interesting things so you can tell people how they can get in contact with you. And I want to talk to you about social media and society as far as you're willing to go with that. And then we will... we will wrap things up. So y'all stay with me. I have on the air with me Marion Brooks. Y'all, this is an incredible young man. You can learn so much from him because I am learning so much from him today. So you stay with me and come back with us in just a few minutes with Gay CSA on Survival Radio Network. We'll be right back. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. We are back. This is Gay Polk Peyton White with Gay CSA on Survival Radio Network. Thank you guys again for being with me this afternoon. I have on the air with me Marion Brooks, and we have been having a wonderful, wonderful discussion. This is such an inspiring young man, and I can call you a young man because I'm 1 year older than you. So this is such an inspiring young man, and I am learning so much from him today, y'all. So you have so much going on. So do you do public speaking as well with your enterprise, or how does your executive coaching go?
Yes, so I do speaking, keynote speaking. I do workshops for large and small groups, and I also do one-on-one coaching.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. So does you get around a lot, because I know when we were scheduling the show, you were hopping on and off planes and running through airports. I ain't gonna compare you to O.J. Simpson, but you run through airports and handling your business. I mean, you are such a busy young man. Does that make time for a personal life at all?
Right now, things have been crazy with the book launch. So I've been preparing this book for like 2.5 years, and really making sure that I make it as amazing as possible, and that I deliver on my intent of, sharing access to the information.
Of course.
So, but the travel has been crazy, but the response for the book has been a big part of that. So we had the huge launch event at the Schomburg Center in Harlem in New York City on Tuesday. The book sold out on the first day. It's a number one bestseller.
That's
sold out
awesome.
On Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
That is awesome.
So I got a request to come. I was in New York and did a whole lot of media. It was a blessing and insane at the same time.
Then
I was going to Chicago for some meetings. I landed in Chicago, and they wanted me to do a meeting around the book. I landed at 6 p.m. They wanted a meeting around the book at 7 p.m. in Chicago, so I did that. That was amazing.
Wow.
Then I flew back to L.A. and had a meeting here last night. So it's a blessing, but it is a lot. But to answer your question directly, right now I'm married to the process right now. And I know it won't be forever, but this is part of the investment. So I'm investing the time now so I can reap the benefits and also expand the impact, because that's what I really want to do. If I can touch it, like I was telling you about my grandmother, her birth name was Sunshine. Her grandmother was half Native American. And she was an incredible woman. And as I said, she molded me into the man that I am today. And without her and her sacrifices and her investment, I wouldn't be here. So I want to touch at least a million lives in her legacy of investing in people. She didn't pass away with $1 million in the bank, but I want to touch a million people. So this is part of that process of getting her message of investing and sharing and caring out there to people. So that's why I work so hard.
Trying
to make my granny proud.
That's right, paying it forward. And you have to pay it forward. People bless your lives. You know, and it's just like so many people always say, well, I did it myself. I pulled myself up. No, you didn't. Even if you just had somebody praying for you, then you didn't do it by yourself. And you have to pave the way for someone else. And I always say that, you know, people who came before us in the civil rights movement and made it possible for us to do things that we're doing, you know, they paved the highway for us, but it's up to us to do highway maintenance, and we have to maintain the roads and make sure that they stay drivable for the ones that are coming behind us. So yeah, you owe a debt, and people don't realize you owe a debt to the ones coming behind you. The same debt, you know, the same debt that I'm paying to James Meredith for opening that door at Ole Miss so that I could matriculate there without the help of U.S. Marshals. You know, the same debt that I owe to him, we also owe that debt to the people who are coming behind us, because they need you. They need you to be that beacon of light. And I just thank you so much for being that beacon of light for so many people. That is absolutely incredible.
Thank you. And I agree with you. Anybody who says that they did it on their own and they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps is delusional, because there's always somebody that's opening a door that has opened a door that you don't even see. So you need to be appreciative, right?
Exactly.
And you need to give credit, and you also need to look for opportunities to help somebody. No matter what level we are in, we can also help somebody else. And so I always tell people, find an opportunity, even if you're having a bad day. One of the things I do, because, you know, we all have our moments, and I teach a lot about positive thinking. We have our moments. Some of my worst days, I find something nice I can do for somebody, and it instantly changes my spirit and my day.
Because
there's always an opportunity to be good and do
good. Exactly. And, I mean, you know, no matter on your worst day, on your very
worst
day, there is somebody who would kill to be in your position.
In your shoes,
Yes, indeed. Perspective is absolutely everything when it comes to that. Okay, so let me see. So, Marian, tell us about, and, you know, I try to stay away from politics. And one of the reasons why I try to stay away from politics is because I'm an elected official, and, you know, because in the judiciary we have to stay nonpartisan. But, I mean, that don't mean that my guests have to do that. So, you know, tell us how you feel about the state of the world today. I mean, about what's going on around us and the things that we're seeing on a daily basis.
Well, I'm an optimist, right? And we've seen much darker days than we have right now. I know things are not good and we're not happy. But I always look for, now, what are we going to do about it?
Because
when you start to just focus on what's happening and not focus on what you can make happen, then we become victims, and we've given our power to that other force that we are against, right?
Yes,
or that we think is against good. So what are we going to do? So that's my thing. I think I'm an optimist, and I think we just have to shift our focus from what they are doing to what we're going to do. Start to invest our energy there. I use the analogy of, you know, watching somebody that is doing a thing like, you know, like a dancing monkey, right? And somebody's pulling all the money out of your pocket.
right.
while you
right.
were watching. So that's what I think we're falling into, watching the shiny object and not focusing on the power that we have to make the changes.
That's
we
right.
have to make the changes ourselves. So I'm optimistic, and as Robert Shuler said, tough times don't last, but tough
they
people
do
last.
They do
and
last.
I know we are tough people, and that we'll make it through this. Now,
right.
as far as the state right now, and one of the things that I think we need to focus on, especially with our young people, with all of the social media stuff and, you know,
right.
in the path or the turn that politics has taken, which I think has gotten very juvenile with this new group that's in charge.
Right.
But I think we have to be careful around bullying.
Right.
And the lack of accountability. Because
oh, yeah.
the person in the bully pulpit sets a tone, and no matter what anyone
yeah.
thinks, they set a tone for the rest of the country around
right.
what's okay and what's acceptable.
That's
so you've
right.
seen a rise in hate groups feeling
right.
empowered. And,
right.
and so what I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of is the emotional intelligence component and teaching our children early. We haven't talked about it a lot in our community or in our country, but I think this is a time because bullying and a lack of accountability are two telltale signs of someone who lacks emotional intelligence. And that
oh, yeah.
person is going to be derailed at some point, and they'll never reach their full potential and have their full impact if they don't handle those things. So I think really making sure that our young people know that bullying and lying and not having accountability are not the path to success.
Oh,
ownership,
yeah.
hard work, and benevolence are the path to success. So I think that's
right.
what we really have to hone in on
today yeah.
to make sure that we move our children, as you said, forward and we leave this place better than it was when we got here.
That's right. And, I mean, you know, you used a very powerful word when you said bullying, and with regard, especially with regard to social media, because, you know, you're around my age, and, you know, at the end of the day, if somebody talked about you at school and bullied you at school, when the school day ended, the bullying also ended. But what we don't realize is now in the age of social media that the bullying continues into the night, and we don't know what our children are going through when they're in their room and they're on social media and somebody
yep.
is bullying them on social media, and we don't know that they're going through that. We don't even know if our child might actually be the bully.
Exactly.
Right. So it's just like we have to be more invested and have more knowledge about what's going on in our children's lives. Otherwise, we are setting them up for failure. There are so many children who are being destroyed by a process that has become acceptable, socially
yeah.
acceptable. And then, you know, that socially acceptable social media outlet has wreaked havoc on a lot of people. I mean, it's a very powerful tool, because without social media, I wouldn't have met Nathan. I wouldn't have met you. You know, it's just like that. It's a powerful networking tool. But at the same time, we have to use it wisely. Otherwise, it's like any other weapon of mass destruction. It can destroy everything, or it can save the world. It can save the world, or it can destroy the world. It's a weapon of mass destruction. In the wrong hands, it's detrimental to society. That's
I agree. and you said the key word, it's a tool.
Right.
So people use tools, and it's how you use the tool and who
right.
you in. Decide to engage with the tool. Like
right.
I started my business, I was not a big social media person because I'm busy all the time. But
right.
now that I've gotten into social media, the reception has been overwhelmingly
right.
positive.
Right.
But I've had to block a few people.
Okay.
Right. I've had to block a few people
mm-hmm.
because what I want to allow is that space that I teach people how to treat me. And what will not be in this space is anything that's nasty or negative towards
right.
me or anybody else. Now,
right.
constructive feedback is accepted.
Yeah.
But if you're downing other people with saying, oh, but Marion, you're wonderful, but this group of people is this or that, you
right.
and I will not be associated, because there will be a time and a point where you might have an upper hand on me, or your perspective on me might change, and you feel
right.
that it's okay to treat me that way. So
exactly.
I watch how people treat other people on social media,
mm-hmm.
and if they are not being good, kind, and benevolent towards other people, I don't deal with
them. Right, right, exactly.
You're nasty
and
to others, you'll eventually be nasty to me.
And we learned that in old school, you know, because if you're a bring a bone, you're a tote one away. Tony.
Exactly. Someone always bringing you, let me tell you, someone always bringing you mess, guess what?
Right. That's right. That is so, so true. And people do not realize that until they have been destroyed by the system of, you know, and it's systematic, whether it's on social media, at the church, in the choir, wherever it is, it's systematic messiness. But, you know, now that social media, you can press a button and send a message to the world, it's made it so massive. And it's sometimes scary and overwhelming to some people because they just really don't understand the dynamics of so many things. Like, for instance, I am a strong advocate of voting. I saw, and the world has seen what voting has done and the power that voting has given to African-American people. You know, it's like Ferguson, Missouri, where they were being bullied by the system. You know, they voted out the district attorney.
Yep,
it's like, you're mad because this white police officer is not being prosecuted and was not indicted for killing this young black man, but you're not going to the polls to vote in the election for the person who's going to present that case to the grand jury, who is the district attorney, who acted as an advocate for Darren Wilson rather than being an advocate for the victim who was shot and killed by Darren Wilson. And so now Ferguson, Missouri, they voted him out. And I was just like so amazed at that, because that was just what I was saying. My cousin Patrick and I know you probably talked to him when you were in New York, because he was at your at the book signing in New York. And we were talking about that. We were in Cancun. We were watching Cuba. We were in Cuba. And we were watching the news, and we were thinking about that. And I was like, okay, Ferguson is 70% black. Why won't they vote him out? You know, that was what I said. And then,
why is he sitting there?
Right. Why y'all taking that? And so we come back. And a few months later, now they voted him out. And he probably never thought he could be defeated. But he has been defeated, and now they can change the system and the way the system. You got to have somebody who cares about what you care about, because if you don't have people in leadership who care about what you care about, then nobody cares what you think. Nobody cares how you feel. So, I mean, and people need to realize that and get with the program, do what they got to do.
So what you just said is what I was talking about earlier when I said taking our power and not focusing on what's happening, but what we can make happen. That's exactly it. And for some reason, I don't understand that people have started to believe this narrative. And I know who puts it out there. You know, it's a political party, that your voting doesn't matter, or that your vote doesn't count, because the more people that look like us that vote, the less elections they win. But if they can control your mind to think that you don't matter and keep you away from the polls, or think that your vote doesn't matter and keep you away from the polls, they win and they succeed. And you ultimately become a victim, because there's nothing that I can do about it. So I think what you just said is paramount. We have to make sure that people understand that when you vote, things change. Like in November, when we vote all the Republicans out of leadership, they're going to be some changes. And they are going to, ones that are there, are going to start to make some adjustments.
They're going to have to. They won't have to.
They're going to have to, because they want to keep their seats. They're more concerned about their seats than they are their party.
Let's be clear. They are more concerned about their paycheck and making sure that it keeps coming than they are about party affiliation. That's real. That is real.
And when the party, and when the public sentiment shifts, they shift with it.
Right.
So we have the power, but we've been taught to be disempowered, or
that's
to be victims, and we can't do anything about it, right?
Exactly.
We can't do anything about it.
Exactly.
Yes,
what
we
going to do, they ain't going to let us do nothing. And so I'm like, who is they, and how they going to stop you? Because the thing about it is, I said this at Martin Luther King banquet I spoke at in January, and I said, if you are not a part of the process that creates our government, then you're being used as a pawn to perpetuate the problems that exist in our government. And there's no other way to put it. They're just moving you out the way so that they can get to the kingdom and do what they want to do. So don't let yourself be used as a pawn. Take your power back and move forward with a society that cares about what you care about. And it, but if you're not voting, don't nobody care what you care about. Don't nobody care what you think. Don't nobody care how you feel. I mean, that is so real that people don't realize.
You and I need to go on the road together on that.
Let's go,
because it was really interesting. And I know we're getting close to time, but you just hit one of my buttons. I love this subject. I was listening to the radio during the election, the most recent presidential election. I was living in New York at that time, so I didn't talk about that. But before I moved to L.A. last year. But before that, I was in New Jersey for 14 years after leaving Dallas. And they had an African-American leader, I forgot his name, and he was on the radio. Now, mind you, he's a leader. He's on the radio. He was on The Breakfast Club, the number one radio show in New York City, number one media center of the world, saying that our votes don't count. It don't make no sense to go out there and vote because they're going to do what they want to anyway with the Electoral College. And let me tell you, I had to pull my car over. I was trying to dial in so fast.
Okay,
to tell him, I was like, please stop spreading your poison. That's what you want to do.
Exactly.
But don't tell that lie to these young people.
I know it.
You have taken their power away from them mentally. And then I have young people talking about, oh, well, we voted for Hillary. She didn't win, so our vote doesn't count. And I'm like, guys, our votes do count. We just
they
have to make
count.
Sure that
you just got to keep going.
You just have to keep going. And we won't win every time, but we will if we are voting. We know that we've done our part to make a difference. That's
right.
What you need to walk away
And with. That's the bottom line. I did my part. I contributed to society on this day. Because voting is a privilege. You should never treat it as a burden because it's a privilege that so many people died for us to have. And that's what we need to realize every day. Every time an election comes around, you think about the people who died so that you will be able to walk in the voting polls, in the front door, you know, whenever you feel like it, between 7 and 7. So it's just, I don't know. But, I mean, it's like as an elected official, I just noticed that when I go to the black districts that we have less than 15% voter turnout. And I'm like, why? Mm-hmm. You know, why be a registered voter if you're not going to go to the poll? Why turn 18 without being a convicted felon if you're not going to avail yourself of the process? Then you're going to get mad. You know, it's like you're going to go vote for different elections, but then you get mad when that judge certifies your 14-year-old as an adult and sends him over to the adult jail and to the adult court. But when the time comes to vote for the judges, you don't go to the polls. That one man gets sent out to jail for 50 years, and you won't go to the polls.
But you know what? You and I should talk some more about this. I think we have an opportunity here because they don't understand the linkage that you and I see.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see the linkage to that judge and voting.
Right.
They don't see it. And so and that's number one. So I think we have a bigger thing there. But the other reason that I think it happens is it's much easier to be a victim of what someone else has done than to get up and try to do something.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's
much,
so much easier
to be a victim.
And because you get to blame other people instead of taking accountability for the things that are going on around you. Yeah, that is absolutely so true. That's too true. It's ridiculously true. Oh, my God. Okay, so tell me, let me see how much time we got. We got about 3 minutes. Let me see. So we got 5. Tell me how first, tell us what we can expect from you next, because you are a mover and a shaker, and I'm just so impressed with you. So tell us what we can expect from you next.
Well, next you're going to see I'm going to continue my book tour. So September 20th, we're going to have a launch, and it's going to be open to the public here in Los Angeles. October 11th, we're having a launch tour signing, book signing in Dallas. And then Chicago and Atlanta will be coming up in November. You'll hear a lot more from me on social media. I'm going to have some e-courses and webinars coming out soon to support the book and to give people the aspect of the book that they need in digestible chunks. There's some other big things in the work that I can't speak of right now, but a lot of exciting things. And, just want to continue to grow on this journey of investing in as many people as I can to help them maximize their impact, their potential, and their performance.
Wow, that is so awesome. Thank you so much, Marian. I have just been so just impacted by the things that you have to say just in this little short time that we were able to talk. So I would just recommend to everybody that they go out and get a copy of this book. Tell us how we can get the book.
So right now you have to go to my website, marionebrooks.com. So MarionEBrooks.com.
Okay.
You can get my book there because we're still sold out on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and so they are working with the backlog. They were not ready for the tidal wave of sales that they got. So it's a good problem to have, but let me tell you, I always have a plan B, so you can buy directly from the publisher, and it will ship in 5 days. And you can reach me on social media at Marion E. Brooks on Facebook, Instagram, as well as Twitter. So Marion E. Brooks.
Yes, Marion E. Brooks. And I have been following you, and I have just been enjoying the inspiring things that you have to say. And I've been watching, you know, Patrick, Patrick and I, Marco Polo. I don't know where in the world he got that app from, but we Marco Polo each other. And he was, you know, telling me about the phenomenal event that y'all had in Harlem. I wish that I could have been there with y'all, because we would have set it off in New York City, honey. When Mississippi goes to New York, oh, yes, it's on.
Turn it up. And let me say, it was an amazing event. I said that it would be epic, but it was even bigger. We had 35 of the top media people in New York to attend that event, which was so humbling. But the big thing about that event is that it was done on August 21st, and that would have been my grandmother's 103rd birthday.
Oh.
I wanted to honor her.
Yes.
On her birthday
awesome.
By launching this book that is dedicated to her.
Oh, that is awesome. It is such a blessing. And I mean, you know, people don't realize how blessed they are when they have people to step into their lives and do the very best. You know, it's like so many of the people that I see who have such a wonderful impact on the world. You know, they had somebody, a grandmother who stepped in, or an uncle or an aunt, someone who stepped in and saved their life. They saw their potential, and they stepped in and helped them to be who God called them to be. And I am just so grateful that you have honed in on your gifts, and you're using your gifts to bless the world, because I'm blessed by it. I really am.
Well, that is so humbling. Thank you so much. And you are absolutely amazing. This is probably the most fun interview I have ever had. This is amazing. It feels like I'm talking to a family member. This is amazing.
I know. I've had people on the air with me, and then when we get off the air, they'll say, girl, I felt like I was having a conversation with my cousin from Mississippi.
Exactly. Oh, that's
God.
How it feels.
That's how it should be. That's
I was like, I lost all protocol. I was like, let's go.
That's the way it should be. Just chill and talk. So give us a parting thought. Just tell us something, you know, if you want to give us the 4 points of the book again, give us a parting thought to leave my listening audience with today.
Okay. So I'm going to leave the audience with two key things. Number one, what you'll find in this book is access to what the 5% of people get that 95% usually do not receive. So please get the book and empower yourself, because you're getting access to what you usually will not have access to. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, 80% of your success will be based on emotional intelligence. If you work on that muscle, and it's not hard, there's simple things that you can do to start to work on your emotional intelligence, as simple as reflecting at the end of the night. And I'll post something about it on social media just to give a tip on how to start your emotional intelligence journey. It will.
And feel free to tag me.
Yes, I will definitely tag you.
Please do.
It will propel you toward above 80% of people in life as well as in business. So really make sure that if you are ready to grow and you want to go to the next level or the next stage, or you feel stuck in your current situation, or you just don't know what is next for you, know that you have power, know that you have options, and know that I'm here to support you.
Amen. Thank you so much, Marion. And I'm going on the website right now. I'm about to order this hell book. I'm about to order this book. So I'm looking forward to receiving it and reading it and being empowered by it. I'm really excited. So I really appreciate you for taking the time from your busy schedule to be with me on Gay CSA on Survivor Radio Network. I hope that we'll be able to have you on the air again sometime in the future. Whenever you are approaching a new endeavor and you want to tell my listening audience about it, you just shoot me a text and let me know, and we'll get that party started. You're always welcome on Gay CSA.
Well, thank you. I had an amazing time, and I will definitely come back. I'd love to come back after you read the book. Ooh, that would be a good conversation.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good conversation. Let's plan for that. Maybe we'll try to get it in before the election. And then that way we can throw some talking in about how people need to vote, because they need. I mean, we cannot express that enough. I mean, there are no words that can emphasize that enough. So thank you, Arian.
You are absolutely correct, and you are welcome. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Really appreciate it.
Were you about to say something else? You could say what you were going to say if you had something
to say. I was just going to say that I'm actually going to, as busy as my schedule is, I'm still going to go to Florida and go door-to-door to help the governor. I want him to be governor, so I'm going to go and volunteer my time. Like I did for Obama, I'm going to invest my time in him.
That's right. He's going to do great. I hate to say it, but that young man who's running against him needs to learn how to watch his mouth. He don't know how to watch his mouth, and his mouth is going to be his own downfall. Okay, Mary, when we get off the air, I'm asking for this coupon code. But anyway, so that's a coupon code. I'm just joking. But anyway, y'all have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And thank you to my guest, Mary Lee Brooks, who took the time to be with us on Gay's PSA today. Y'all make sure that y'all go and get a copy of his book, What You Don't Know Is Hurting You. And you can learn so much more than what you learned today. You can get some fillers and fill all that in, because we couldn't get it all in 1 hour. But thank you guys so much for being with me today. Y'all have a wonderful, wonderful Labor Day, and I look forward to being with you again next week on Gay CSA on Survivor Radio Network. Have a great weekend.